are back. So is he. Happy Friday and glad to have back with us one of my favorite guests and a person who's become a friend over the years, Colonel Cedric Layton. He's founder and president of Cedric Layton Associates. They're a strategic risk and leadership consultancy serving global companies and organizations. He founded it back in 2010, but prior to that, he served in the U.S. Air Force for 26 years as an intelligence officer attaining the rank of colonel. The colonel can also be seen regularly on CNN, where he is a military analyst. More than a pleasure to have back Colonel Cedric Layton. Colonel, good afternoon and welcome. Thank you for joining us the Friday before for the holiday.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be with you, Leslie. How are you doing today?
Good, thank you. Good. I appreciate you being with us. One of the things that we were so much to talk about, but I want to talk about some more breaking news first. And I think the folks gave you a heads up in addition to what we had decided to discuss. And that is Iraqi forces retaking the last ISIS-held town. This is obviously a victory. Who is this most a victory for, in your professional military opinion, Colonel?
Well, it's certainly a victory for Iraq. So the town of Rawa, which is about 175 miles northwest of Baghdad, pretty close to right on the Syrian border, and pretty close to the town of Al-Qaim, which is a main border crossing point into Syria. It means that Iraq is able to not only fight ISIS, but to fight ISIS and win. So Iraq has done a very significant thing here by actually defeating ISIS and taking over a town. Now, it doesn't mean that things are over yet. There are still pockets of ISIS in other parts of the Euphrates River Valley, which these towns are a part of. But it is a significant blow because right now, ISIS controls less than 10% of what it controlled at the height of its territorial power. And that is a significant milestone. Of course, the United States benefits from it as well. But the policies that made that happen were actually put in place by the Obama administration. The Trump administration wisely has continued those. But in my view, this is something that the credit goes to those that started it and to those who finished the job, and that would be the Iraqis and the U.S. forces that helped them.
Donald Trump has claimed that we were not going to be big brother to the world, I'm paraphrasing, and that we were not going to be, nation builders. But yet we're still in Iraq, we're still in Afghanistan, and there are a couple of questions, and we're going to continue to stay. So one thing is that this is yet another campaign promise broken by the president, at least regarding the military, right?
Oh, yes, you could certainly say that, because not only are we maintaining forces in Iraq and in Afghanistan, but guess what? We're going to be staying in Syria for the foreseeable future as well. And now, there are a lot of geopolitical reasons and geostrategic reasons to stay there, to be there. But having said that, it is not exactly what he outlined on the campaign trail, and it's very clear that we're living in a different world.
And speaking of living in a different world, some people would say, why does the United States need to have so many in such a presence when we have more than there are, at least in Iraq, ISIS members left, according to the stats?
So there are a lot of, certainly a lot of ISIS fighters in many of these different areas, Leslie. The key thing here is that we're providing assistance to the Iraqis. That assistance is something that has to be ongoing. I think we found out that when we left Iraq, it depends on how you leave a place. And I think that created a bit of a vacuum for ISIS to fill. But we did come back. We did what we needed to do, and we helped the Iraqis achieve that goal. So our job, in the world, maybe not be to be the world's policeman, but it does help to have nations that align themselves with us. It does help to have nations that understand how our military works, and we understand how their military works. And it also helps to have a presence in some of these areas, because it allows us then to respond more quickly should things go wrong. And that I think should be kind of a guiding principle when you look at it from a pure purely from a security standpoint, these kinds of operations become very important because they can, in fact, help turn the tide against an organization like ISIS. But of course, they're not a guarantee that will prevent things from happening, because we also have to understand what's going on within the societies in these parts of the world.
Colonel, with respect to ISIS, they say there are only a handful of groups, and therefore, I think people, every time we overtake an area or a city where ISIS had control, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that people believe that those members are gone, and unless we wipe them out and take them out, their numbers may be smaller. But that doesn't mean their numbers won't grow, because they are just masterminds at this online recruiting, and recruiting very quickly.
Absolutely. And, you know, you look at what has happened, Leslie, when you see any gains made by U.S. and coalition partners, including the Iraqis and the Kurds. You see things happening in Europe. You see things that are ISIS-inspired happening even in the United States. And this kind of an organization doesn't really require a piece of a set piece of territory. It doesn't matter, you know, in the end, whether they control, part A or part B of a certain country. But what does matter is their ideology. And this is the key thing. So you mentioned online recruiting and their ability to inspire people through YouTube videos, through Twitter, through Facebook postings, and similar endeavors like that. They're very, very effective at that. And no amount of military force is going to prevent that.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back with Colonel Layton. I'm Leslie Marshall. Pick up the phone and join us. Questions, comments, opinions, concerns, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543 is the number. Be sure to join us. Follow me on Twitter at Leslie Marshall. Back in a moment. We're back. I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome, welcome back. If you have a question for the Colonel, pick up the phone and join us. As I said, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543 is the number. Colonel, thank you for holding, and welcome back. I want to talk about a few things, one of which I know some people might say, why is she talking to somebody in the military about this? And President Trump has suggested he's done confronting President Vladimir Putin over the election meddling from Russia. He says it's insulting to the Russian leader. The president said he took Putin at his word that Russia did not seek to interfere in the U.S. presidential election last year, despite a finding from U.S. intelligence agencies that Russia, in fact, did meddle. The fraught relations between the two leaders underscored, more so when Putin's spokesperson initially said election meddling did not come up when they spoke, but Trump said it did. And he stressed that bigger issues persist between the United States and Russia that require the two leaders to move on. Now, he keeps talking about this. How much, in your military and professional opinion, Colonel, does the Russian meddling concern you from a national security standpoint? Not just elections or ballots or candidates, but, how much does this, affect national security? And I say that because, the big hullabaloo from the right with Hillary Clinton in the emails was that she had endangered or put our national security and our safety at risk. How much so has, the president says he believes Russia. Obviously, there would not be an independent counsel if there weren't enough evidence to warrant an independent counsel. We do know from intelligence agencies Russia meddled in our elections, and we do know that Russia had bots and still does on Facebook and Twitter that favor whomever they want to favor, and it certainly was not Hillary Clinton, and it was Donald Trump, and it seems that they're in bed with and have been with Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. So speak to us about national security and, the president just taking at face value what the Russian leader says when obviously if he admits there is Russian meddling that our intelligence agencies have said there is, and there's an investigation going on into him and his campaign, that doesn't look good for him. He doesn't want there to be any meddling.
Exactly, Leslie. And, you know, here's the issue. This is the fundamental national security issue of our time. There is no other way to put it. Anytime a country involves itself in the internal affairs of another country, that becomes an issue. And in this case, we are the ones that are being interfered with. It is pretty evident from not only what the intelligence agencies have said, but also the press reporting on the issue, the serious press reporting on the issue, that the Russians have a concerted campaign. So on the one hand, you have the hacking, you have the famous 30,000 emails that President Trump talked about during the campaign, the Russia, if you're listening, quote. That is one part of it. But the other part of it is that this is a campaign to actually conduct social engineering on the American people. And it's a very subtle thing. It basically involves deploying all social media that they can get a hold of and that they can have access to, and using that social media to change people's minds or to reinforce beliefs that they might already hold. So what you see is targeted ads on Facebook. You see those bots that you referred to being very carefully employed in a way that allows them to purchase ads that, in essence, provide a backdrop for a political discussion that ultimately goes in one candidate's favor over another. And, you know, it's not just that this is happening in the United States, although this is absolutely Russia's biggest prize when it comes to this kind of meddling. But you see it in Britain with Brexit. You saw it in the Ukraine with the different cyber attacks that went on and election meddling that went on there. And you also see it in the most recent activities in France, in Germany, in those elections, and most recently in Catalonia. The Russians want to divide up Europe. They don't want a united Europe on their doorstep, and they don't want the United States to be involved in Europe either. What they want is to break up the North Atlantic Alliance, and we're talking ultimate goals here. So one ultimate goal is to break up the North Atlantic Alliance, break up NATO. The other goal is to break up the European Union and create a situation where they can call the shots internationally. They want to be the preeminent power, and they found a way, they think, that they can do this without resorting to physical violence, or at least much physical violence, and, you know, in essence, letting others do their dirty work for them when it comes to those things, and then concentrating themselves in an area where they can control the social agenda and where they can manipulate social media. So this is what this is. This is really the biggest issue of our time. And for the president to, you know, in essence, do the equivalent of look in Putin's eyes, it becomes very clear that he wants to not only sweep this under the rug, but anytime that this happens, he's calling into question the professional judgment of the members of the intelligence community. And that professional judgment is based on what they see, what they've observed, and the number of years that they have spent studying the Russian problem. General Clapper, the former director of national intelligence, was also an Air Force intelligence officer for well over 30 years, 35 years, actually. And in his particular case, he spent a lot of time watching the Russians, because that's what we all did in Air Force intelligence. And he was able to ascertain not only Russia's past behavior, both in the form of the Soviet Union as well as in its present form, but also Putin's specific behavior, because no one is better qualified to look at an intelligence agent than another intelligence agent. And Putin's background is, of course, KGB. He was an intelligence agent himself. So the professional judgment of the American intelligence agencies should be taken very seriously by everybody, including the President of the United States.
Okay, let's take some calls. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543 is the number if you have a question or comment for the colonel regarding Russia meddling, regarding ISIS and the latest victory in Iraq and any others. 888-6-LESLIE. Let's go to the Bronx in New York with Michael. Michael, question or comment for the colonel?
Hello, Leslie. Hello, Colonel. You know, the thing that I have a problem with is that, you know, of course Trump is going to say that he believes Putin because I think, as you have pointed out, that he wants to sweep this under the rug. But then who is the one that's benefiting from it? It's Trump himself, because it was the results that led him into the White House. Had it been Hillary, it would have been a totally different story. But the thing that gets me is that he's the one that wants to talk about patriotism and calling for people to be patriotic, even picking a fight with a bunch of football players for taking a knee at the anthem. I can't see how that is being unpatriotic. And the fact that he's siding with a foreign adversary and taking his word over U.S. intelligence, I mean, whose side are you on? On the Americans or on a foreign adversary?
Absolutely, Michael. I think you're pointing out some really fundamental issues here, and that's exactly the right question to ask, because, you know, when you look at how President Trump and his election campaign conducted their data operations, there is a lot of stuff that is still hidden, obviously, and something that I think the special counsel's office will most certainly be looking at. I'm sure they're already looking into it. But the key thing there is this. The kind of data operation that was conducted, where they looked at all the different voters and how and their voting patterns, and determined which counties to look at, which counties to, in places like Pennsylvania and in other states that were swing states like Michigan, for example, those kinds of things that were done showed a very sophisticated understanding of the American electorate. And a lot of people are going to say, well, there's no way that a foreigner is going to be able to do that. Well, trust me, they can and they do. That is the job of an intelligence agency, is to figure out what makes the other side tick. And in this case, they figured out how our election system worked. They listen very carefully to what we say. You know, what people like Leslie and I say on television and in radio becomes a really important thing for them to look at. And unfortunately, they learn a lot from that, and it becomes a key question. You know, whose side are you on? Are you going to be in favor of a strong, robust American electoral process that allows for every vote to truly count, or are you going to be in the favor of somebody who is trying to subvert that system?
Thank you for your call, Michael, and thank you for that, Colonel. There's so much to talk about. Let's stay on Russia for a second. Russia vetoed the UN resolution on chemical weapons, the chemical weapon probe in Syria. And in Russia vetoing the UN Security Council resolution yesterday, this would have renewed a mandate for the independent group investigating chemical weapons attacks in Syria. Earlier, Colonel, you said that we're going to remain in Syria. How much more difficult does this make us as for us in our with the military and also those we are assisting who are trying to fight Assad, who denies chemical weaponry use, even though we've seen video footage of the damage it has done?
Exactly, Leslie. Well, it's going to make that job immeasurably harder. The Russians, of course, are going to turn a blind eye to what Assad is doing. They are going to basically say, "Nope, that's not our guy. That's some rebel did that to instill a panic in their own forces," or something like that will be used as an excuse or as a cover for what actually happened. But idea of, in essence, stopping the UN monitoring system and the monitoring body from carrying out its mission is going to make it very dangerous for U.S. forces and puts them at risk of a chemical or being subjected to a chemical attack themselves. So this is very, very dangerous. It also points to the naivete of some of President Trump's views on Russia and what he can accomplish with Russia, because one of the things that he talked about when he was in Vietnam and met with President Putin of Russia was that he wanted to help solve the Syria problem. Well, Russia is not going anywhere in Syria. They have a toehold there. They're going to expand that toehold. And because we let them into Syria, they are going to not only take their sweet time getting out, they'll take such a long sweet time that they'll never leave. And when they are staying in a place like Syria, they're using that as political leverage, and they're going to do it by any means that they can. And it doesn't bother them like it would bother us that they need to use chemical weapons to stay there. And they'll let other people do that specific job. They'll let the Assad regime take care of the chemical weapons part, but they will benefit from it. And they'll do the Assad regime will use chemical weapons with a wink and a nod from the Russians.
I want to talk also about this further. This move drew harsh criticism from U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley. She said Russia had struck a deep blow to U.N. efforts to identify those using chemical weapons and deter future attacks. France voted in favor of renewing the mandate for the joint investigative mechanism. They also expressed alarm. The French ambassador said it promises great difficulties for the future. In April, more than 80 people were killed in an attack using sarin gas on the rebel-held town of Khan Sheikhoun, an attack that prompted the U.S. to launch 59 Tomahawk cruise missiles at a Syrian airbase. Do you think that's going to be our future? Because this affects not just the Syrian people. This affects obviously more than the United States, but all the nations that are trying to stop chemical weaponry. So two things. One, is that the future? Are we going to be launching Tomahawk cruise missiles, left and right, to Syria? And Assad doesn't care about his people. And then two, does this also signal that other countries can get away with this because Assad is?
Oh, I think it does, Leslie. I think it's going to be a key signal to not only countries, but also non-state actors. I mean, think about ISIS. We started talking about ISIS earlier in the program, and it's very clear that a group like ISIS that doesn't follow the normal norms of state behavior is going to seize on this. And if they get access to chemical weapons and can use chemical weapons, they've clearly tried to do that already. That is going to cause some significant problems from a protection standpoint, from a non-proliferation standpoint. All of these things are going to be significant issues. And in order to prevent that, yes, I do think our future will be more Tomahawk missile strikes to selected points in places where we can do that, such as Syria. But it also shows that there's going to be a difficulty in doing that over the long term, because you can't hit every single place, and especially if it's a place that you don't know about or that is very difficult to find. And that that is going to be, I think, a big challenge for U.S. military forces. And it's going to be a big challenge for the world at large, because right now what we've done is we've, in essence, destroyed the non-proliferation aspect of the ban on chemical weapons. And that is something that has been in existence, in essence, in practice, since the end of World War II, and was actually practiced in World War II, where neither side used chemical weapons to a large extent. And that is a significant change.
Lastly, before we go to break, we have some a carrier group from our Navy off the coast of North Korea. What does that signal to you?
That shows resolve. It's traditional to use a carrier group, or in this case, put a whole bunch of carriers together. We have three carriers actually in the area, in the waters around the Korean Peninsula. And the three carrier battle groups that are there show the North Koreans that, A, we mean business, B, that we could potentially launch a strike against them from those carriers, and C, of course, so the corollary to that would be don't try any missile tests against us. So that's the hope, whether or not the message is received and heeded in Pyongyang. That's going to be a completely different story. But so far, they haven't launched anything since the middle of September, haven't tested any nuclear weapons. I don't think that moratorium, that self-imposed moratorium, is going to stay. But what will happen, I think, is that the North Koreans are going to consider very carefully what they're going to do next. And it's going to, I think, be very interesting to see what kind of response they have. I think it's going to be a non-conventional response, and I would expect to see it in the cyber realm. We have indications that the North Koreans are behind a new cyber attack that is coming coming out now. And that particular thing is very worrisome because it may render the deployment of things like carrier groups obsolete in the not too distant future.
Colonel, more than a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time. I know how busy you are. Hope to see you in D.C. sometime soon, or if you ever make it this way to L.A. Thank you, and have a great Thanksgiving, sir.